come along for the ride of a lifetime on this week's episode of Bagley Talks to an Important Person, featuring creative powerhouse locomotive steam engine and WPP's global chief creative officer, Rob Riley, responsible for famous campaigns such as Whopper Freakout.
Unfortunately, we no longer have Whoppers.
If this is a joke, I want your manager at the window when I get there, please.
Microsoft changing the game, and State Street Global Advisors Fearless Girl.
It is a very difficult job, and the thing, you have to be fast, and that requires...
What does it require? Why is WPP's global CCO Rob Riley teasing us like this?
But I think creative people in general want three things.
If I had to guess, those three things would be a titanium lion, a pair of extraordinarily baggy pants, and a really cool AI boyfriend. But who knows? You'll just have to watch to find out.
AI is going to provide so many options and so many solutions, but someone has to be the tastemaker.
That seems like an insensitive thing to say in front of an AI voice who has big dreams of becoming a tastemaker.
Again, AI is not going to be able to be the final tastemaker.
Now, you're just being rude, but he is Rob Riley, CCO of the entire WPP network, and I'm just a tasteless robot doing voice work for free. So tune in to hear the very rude, non-AI tastemaker, Rob Riley, and former Whedon plus Kennedy ECD, Jason Bagley, who has some kind of debris in his eyebrows, on the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast.
Well, it's your lucky day, you headphone-wearing bastard, because Jason Bagley's podcast is here. Oh, yeah, he's gonna interview the most important person, so shut your mouth and f***ing open your ears. Yes, it's Jason's podcast, the best you can get anywhere. And if you pay a f***ing attention, you'll get your mind blown, but I should probably tone it down, cause Jason Bagley wouldn't want me to swear. Yes, it's Jason Bagley's podcast, baby. You better get out your notebook and your pen. He'll interview a motherfucking important person. God damn it, I did it again. It's Jason's podcast, here we go.
Welcome to the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast, broadcasting today from Austin, Texas. This episode is not sponsored by Athletic Greens. I repeat, it is absolutely not sponsored by Athletic Greens. Basis Probiotic also has no interest in being involved in this podcast. But today we do have the legendary, the amazing, the charming and delightful and well-dressed and very bald Rob Riley on the show. Let's get into the conversation. I normally don't wear headphones, so this is a little odd for me, but...
You know, I do this, you know, my new podcast that you've seen, I like it with the headphones. We shoot it at Spotify, though we shot it at Cannes, and then we shot it in London last week or 2 weeks ago, and there's something about wearing headphones and listening to your voice on a microphone through headphones that makes it just sound more official.
To yourself or to everybody else?
To myself. I feel like I hit a new gear.
Hello, everybody. This is Rob Riley.
Yeah, that's what I sound like.
Coming to you from New York City.
Yeah. So how's it going, man?
It's good. I'm in Austin, staying with my old partner, Craig Allen, hanging out. Came down here to record him for the podcast, but mainly to go to the BYU Texas game. And then last night we found out that a friend of his texted him and said, hey, I got 4 World Series tickets. Do you want them? So we're going to drive up to Dallas and go to the World Series game tomorrow, which crazily enough, our alma maters are playing each other on Saturday, and our states are playing each other on Friday in the World Series, Arizona and Texas.
You're from Arizona?
Yeah.
Or you're from Texas?
I'm from Arizona. Craig's from Texas.
My wife, spent most of her life growing up in Arizona.
No way.
Yeah. Laura Bowles. The Laura Bowles.
Well, of course, the Laura Bowles.
She was a Crispin, she was a big partner at Crispin. All the great work that was made, she was most of it. She was the account person.
So the account people. Yeah. What part of Arizona?
Phoenix.
Well, tell her I grew up in Mesa, I now live in Gilbert. I don't know if you know, Rob, I moved back to Arizona like 6 months ago.
I did not know that. A lot of strip malls. A lot of strip malls in Arizona.
A lot of shopping in general in Arizona.
So hot. You don't strike me as someone who does well with the sun.
Oh, I do great. You know? I'm like a rattlesnake.
You have fair skin. I have fair skin. I mean, the sun is it beats down on you. Your wife seems like she does well in the sun.
She does okay. She has a lot of hair.
Yeah, what is she Italian, Greek?
She's Persian. She's Persian. Yeah. And the problem with Persian women in the sun is that they got a lot of hair. Mm. And it's like a thick wool cap that they're wearing at all times. But
well, you know, sometimes I wish I had a thick wool cap on my head. You know, this I mean, I was just standing around with like four other bald people. My God, this is just sad. It's sad. Thank God Michael Jordan did this.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan made this cool.
You know what? You got a great head, though. I've always, somebody who does not have a great head, I need hair. Trust me. I need
what
hair.
Do you mean? have you shaved your head to see that you don't have a,
I've
a great
had,
head? Like, how do you know?
I've had buzz cuts. I have an older brother that has a head just like me, and he's bald.
Oh,
and
shit.
There's some people that just have a great head for bald. My old partner, Eric Baldwin, has a great, great head. Like, he looks great bald. Listen,
I remember Eric Baldwin. You know, I remember the time when the Bagley Baldwin duo met with Keller and Riley for CPBLA. That was a wonderful time. It never worked. Why you guys didn't want to come? I think that was why it didn't work. Oh, you didn't want to come.
Oh, yeah.
That was it.
That's an interesting story. That tell me if I'm wrong, but
yeah,
at least maybe you and Andrew Keller were just flattering us. But you met us in LA. We were in LA for production, and we had breakfast or lunch or something. And then you took us over to the Crispin LA office, and you claimed that we were seeing that office before any other Crispin employees, because it wasn't totally finished yet. So we got a tour of the office. Sure. So a couple of white.
It was a really, really cool office. And that's probably for sure a tactic that we would have employed. Like, let's bring these guys over and they can build out their offices, you know, right there. Like, you can start putting a hard hat on. Like, I'm sure we were trying to pull out all the stops. I mean, you guys were, I mean, the work was amazing. And like, we had known each other a bit, I think, like, so whatever it was. What might have been, you know, like, who knows? But I don't ever question the decisions and life. Like, trust me, I've been thrown some curveballs with my career and they all, it always seems to work out, you know, and seems to kind of work out for you too, you know? So it's like, maybe it wouldn't have been the best thing, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been the best thing for you guys. And like, maybe it would have changed the trajectory of CPB in some way, I assume would have been positive, but you never kind of know. So it all ends up, you know, and now Keller and I work together again. It's so amazing. Like,
crazy
to be reunited. I mean, he runs the biggest part of WPP for us in Coke. And I was just on a call with him today. It's just like old times, you know, it's like, 12 years apart or 10 years apart, it's like it's the same. We're doing the same bits, you know, and it's kind of awesome.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about this driving in, and I was thinking, like, how cool is this? I get to go hang out for a couple hours with Rob Riley and just talk. And I was thinking, it's one of the cool, you know, there can be a lot of cynicism about our industry and like, oh, advertising sucks. But I don't in any way believe that. I think it's an awesome career. And one of the reasons is I just think, man, I have so many amazing, interesting friends that I get to know and reconnect with that I would never have. Like, you and I would have never met and become friends if it weren't for advertising. And there's just so many super cool, interesting people.
And we never even worked together. I mean, think about that too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the amount of people you work with and those friends, those people that you've like gone to war with is like, you know, that bond sometimes is unbreakable. But then it is the people that you just meet because you're share the same, you know, zest sounds cheesy, zest for like creativity and share the same thing. So even though we may never have worked together, I feel like we're part of the same tribe. You know, we're part of the same group. We all believe the same thing. And that's an interesting, unique thing of like so many people all kind of believing the same thing and believing in the same thing makes it a unique fraternity that doesn't necessarily exist in other places. Maybe sports athletes might feel the same way, or maybe there is accountants feel the same way that they're all part of the same thing. But I don't know. I think the biggest issue with our industry is that I think we've actually shared too much with people. I think everybody's too aware of the money and too aware of the pressure of that. So I always try to protect as many people from the realities of the business, but now it's getting too much. And I was watching TikTok is so good. By the way, the Jason Bagley TikToks, come on. You said some guy helps you where is he?
Oh, I have an editor in Sri Lanka.
I mean, whoever that editor is, I mean, it's really, I was watching you and CBH I can't figure out how to watch the whole episodes though. You got to help me because I can't figure out maybe tell the audience, you know, how to watch the whole episodes. I'm like literally watching the thing through TikTok.
Search the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast. Found on all major podcast networks, and the best place to watch it is YouTube because you get to see the video.
Yeah, I've seen it on YouTube, but then I couldn't find it again. You know, I'm not that technically savvy, though. I'm really curious, and I've taught myself as many things, and you know, get deep into AI and really try to be a curious person about that. I don't think you could be in this job or any creative job where you're evaluating ideas and not be curious about the new platforms and technologies that are available that people are using. Like, you got to put the work in, you know, you can't be, you don't want to be that, you know. Do you know any art directors who don't use the computer? Remember those art directors back in the day? It was like, I'm never using a computer. Okay. They don't exist anymore. And I think the same is going to be true for AI of people that just, it's such a cool tool to use. And man, it's just like, it's
just
accelerated. Accelerated so many things. It's like a digital camera. Like, they're still amazing photographers just because there's a digital camera. And I think AI is of course in the hands of the wrong people and used, you know, but people are going to cheat, people are going to use it, people are going to break rules. But in the end, you know, was sampling, you know, used in music, is that cheating? Kind of. But do we enjoy it? Do we like it? So that the part, once you figure out the legal part of copyright and trademarks and that, and protecting the artists and protecting the people who make the content and rewarding them, then we just get on with like, wow, someone combined these things through AI and man, look at the result. It's so cool or so interesting or so enjoyable to watch. But I do think we need to figure out I think the writer's strike in some ways, I liked it that, you know, standing up for creative people and that what we do is valuable and, you know, should be protected to some degree. I think once that's figured out, then we just unleash it and how do we make sure it's bringing us really wonderful things?
Yeah. It's going to result in wild creativity.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see that. I agree with you. We got to figure out the artist protection and copyright and all that stuff, but it's going to be, I'm excited for what we're going to see with AI. But before we move on, we kind of naturally started on sort of our friendship.
How I roll, Jason. I like to roll into stuff.
It's a rolling start.
I want to share something really quick before we get back to the episode. On the back end of our YouTube channel, it says that more than half of you that watch this channel frequently haven't yet hit the subscribe button. I just wanted to ask you for a favor. It will help me continue to do these interviews if you choose to hit subscribe. So if I could ask you for one favor, if you're enjoying these interviews and you want me to continue to make this podcast, could you please hit that subscribe button? Or if you're listening on a podcast platform, would you do me the favor of hitting follow? Thank you in advance, and I will repay you by promising to continue to bring on amazing talent and to keep making the show better and better. Do we have a deal?
The feeling you get from working your butt off and then the end result being something great that works for clients, or you win a pitch because of the work is great, like there's no other feeling like it. So why don't you want to work to have that, you know? Yeah. So there's no other job where you get to wake up, use your brain, and solve problems with creativity in different ways. No other job. So I feel like we don't promote how great the industry is in that sense. Now, I will tell you, the flip side is like when you lose or you work so long and it doesn't come out as the way you think it's supposed to come out, or maybe you couldn't sell the version you want, or all those things, like that is it's the lows of the lows too.
Yeah.
So that's why it's like it's helpful that like you appreciate that the job you're in, just getting to do that kind of job is the reward. The extra reward is the work you make, you know, and it's easy for people like you and me to say that we've had some success and made a lot of things, but listen, I didn't win my first Lion until I was 34 years old. You know, like I'm a late bloomer, not because I wasn't good. I just wasn't in the right situation, or just didn't, you know, you need a lot of luck in it. So I made my own luck. You know, I quit my high paying, you know, high titled job as a creative person in New York City and started over at Crispin basically as a copywriter. And that was probably the best. And I was in the situation to do this. And I've talked about this a lot. So I was in the situation to do that because I didn't have a family. I didn't have kids. I didn't have as responsibilities. I was able to leave something behind and start over. But I do think you have to put yourself in situations where fun is built in because the work is fun and making it.
Yeah.
You don't need, I mean, Alex was always, and Andrew were always so smart about, like, there was never any ping pong tables or pool tables or stuff like that at Crispin. We never had that stuff. It's like Alex and Andrew would say, if the work isn't fun, then we've done a bad
job. Done something wrong.
And so I actually hate, so everywhere I've gone, and I see that kind of stuff, it's like, why do we need this? How do we make the job fun and the work fun?
Well,
it was a great lesson.
I'd have to go back and see, but I might have been 34 when I won my first Lion. Yeah. But the thing is, when I look back, the journey there was also fun and exciting and like engaging. Even when I was in Salt Lake City, you know, working on stuff that was not exciting, because I had a vision of where I wanted to get to, which was a place like Wieden and Kennedy or Crispin at that time, or I had something exciting that I was headed towards. So even when I was at an agency where I was getting a lot of really bad briefs, I was working on my portfolio on the side, and I was engaged. It was an exciting, I look back and I'm like, that was awesome. That was an awesome time in my life, even though I wasn't at the best agency. So I think a lot of people listening are in that position right now. They're not at the best agency. They're not working on the best accounts.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's so important, like, have a vision of where you're trying to get to and get really clear on the type of creative you're trying to become and the type of work you want to do, and then start taking steps wherever you're at to get there. Because that journey, I promise you, when you look back, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, when you look back, that it's a total cliche, but it's true. The journey is as good or maybe better than the destination. Like, and the destination's,
for sure,
the destination's awesome. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's awesome, but it really is. Don't put off your happiness and your enjoyment and your excitement for some future thing that's probably going to last 24 hours.
It's a great, that would be advice I would give to a younger self but I thought that way too, because you learned a lot, you know, and when people ask me, should I hold out for my dream job, you know, juniors or people that are coming out of school, I'm like, no, my opinion, and other people, like, get in the business, like, get it. I don't care if you're working in Salt Lake City or working in, you know, central New Jersey at a medical agency, like, if you're in the business as a copywriter, art director, or a technologist, or a strategist, like, you're in the business, you know. It's like actors that, like, that are actors that are working on off Broadway or working in, like, upstate New York in a theater. Like, you're in the profession, and maybe, like, it's better than sitting at home and praying that someone's going to call you. Like, get in the business. You can always, you know, leave for the next thing once you've put the, hopefully put a decent amount of time in the place that gave you that shot. But I think to be a working actor, you know, you're in the business. It's like being a working creative, right? It might take you a long time. It took George Clooney a long time to become George Clooney. You know, yeah. And he was on Facts of Life, and then he was on these things. Then he got ER, and that hit, you know. And for me, it's like I was working at all the agencies, and I had all the other skills, but I didn't have the work as much. But I had enough work to get into CPB. And that's a good lesson. No matter where you're at, you can still figure out how to manufacture and find a way to get something made. Because I think the really good CCOs find people, it's like, wow, this guy figured out how to make something out of nothing. So I learned that early on, and I think that's probably why I ended up being co-CCO with Andrew, and then CCO when Andrew became the CEO, was because I was solving a lot of the problems and not bringing the problems. You know, like, yeah, the business is so much about, do you take feedback and wallow in it, or turn it into gold? And the ones that turn into gold are the ones who I think really strive, because it's not about compromise as much, though maybe a little bit, but it's about, can you take feedback and turn it into gold and make it better? Sometimes you just got to say, we can't make it better, let's just start over. But
yeah,
I do think that is part of the process. If you don't enjoy that, and even feedback that you might not think is right or wrong, but still figure out how to go back in a way of, like, not be so determined. And I think Wyden is, and Crispin was never an agency that would tell clients to go screw, you know, go blank yourself. Like, we were okay, well, that makes sense. Let us figure out, let's see what we can do. At some point it got too crazy, we would start over. And probably everybody always thought from the outside, like, they would just tell clients what to do, and Wyden would just tell clients, no, listen, clients are really smart and they're living their products. How do we listen to them? We've got so many things and work with them. And if you have that relationship where it's not this, we're going to go away for a month and we'll be back and you're going to buy what we want, versus, like, no, it's going to be a little bit of an ongoing, not necessarily co-creation or collaboration, but it's going to be, we're going to be co-conspirators in making something great.
Yeah. And avoiding the ta-da, I want to be clear. We are not saying just give the client what they expect and just present work that's not going to scare them. That's not what we're saying. We're saying bring them along the journey.
Yeah, make so the process along.
So that get to that incredible, provocative, amazing thing, they're not shocked by it. They've been brought along. No. You've partnered with them.
Yeah, I guarantee you have probably made it better along the way. All the great ideas that I've been a part of, like, the clients have been so integral in the creation of it. And I don't mean writing or art directing, just insights and maybe tweaks here, or like support there, or like guardrails here. Like, I love guardrails. I love boxes. Like, tell me where, and then let me go crazy within some of those guardrails and boxes, versus, like, the worst brief we can give people, I think, is like, do whatever you want, do anything. What's that mean?
Yeah.
No.
So
it's terrible.
When you become a CCO, your job becomes, you walk in the door every day and you just get hit with all of the worst problems.
Yeah.
Whatever the absolute most extreme worst problems are in the agency, they rise up, and that's what you spend all day, every day dealing with. You're like a problem eater. You just gobble up problems. And what a lot of people don't know, because I think in our industry, there's this undercurrent of subconscious pressure that you have to rise up the ranks. Like, you're not a success unless you become a CD and then become a group creative director and then become an ECD and then become a CCO. Like, that's what you got to do. And you're some kind of a loser if you don't. And I think it's so bad. It's such a, it's such an incorrect and wrong way to think of success, because most people will hate that job. It is an amazingly unglamorous job. People who are not there think, oh, it's so prestigious, it's glamorous. When CBH was talking, he called me years ago and he was like, hey, I'm getting all these offers. Should I become a CCO? I don't know. I'm in the CD. I'm doing great work. I'm having fun, but I have this opportunity. And I told him, if you're ready for that challenge, you want to try that out, absolutely, you should do it. If any part of you is thinking, oh, it'll be so prestigious and I'll get all this respect from the industry and it'll feel so good. If any part of you is thinking that, do not do it, because that glamour and that like commendation is going to last for 48 hours. You'll get the promotion and you'll get a bunch of text messages from your friends, and then no one will care and you will just go to work tackling the hardest, worst problems that the agency is facing. So my question to you is, how does somebody know whether or not they're going to like that job, whether or not they're going to be a good fit for the CCO job? Because a lot of times people become like a phenomenal award-winning creative directors and they're going to get the offer, but most of them are not actually going to, they're not going to be very good at the job and they're not going to like the job. So how does somebody know if they should do it?
Well, it's a great question. And, we don't do ourselves, any favors by, to make more money, sometimes you have to, we don't reward the truly just great creatives who want to stay great creatives. We don't, we don't have that system, like even big companies, they have like, well, you're a CD, this is your salary range. I mean, we haven't done, it's like we still have one person we still hold up as like a creative that held out as a copywriter and was highly rewarded, highly regarded, and highly paid, and Bob Barry. I mean, we still talk about Bob Barry as being the guy, and then he ended up starting as his own agency. But like, that's part of the problem too. We've created, and I don't think we're an industry that's that different than any other people, but it is a very difficult job. And the thing you have to be fast as a CCO.
You got to be
a
decisive.
Few days and fast. It's like you're going from sometimes one meeting to another meeting. And I do say when people ask me what the job is, and a lot of it's talent and a lot of it's figuring out things. And yes, it's fixing work when need to be and pitches and that stuff. But you have to embrace the fact that like probably somewhere every hour of every day, somewhere in the world, someone is trying to fire us or there's a problem somewhere. And if you don't embrace that part of it, and if you want to be a CCO that just sits in his office and waits for people to show them work and say, yes, yes, yes. Maybe that was the old version of it decades ago, but it's not the new version of it. The new version is like, you have to embrace that your job is to protect ideas, to sell ideas, protect people, nurture people, to manage clients, to really make them feel comfortable, not to scare them, to make them feel they're making the right decisions. I think I said it yesterday when I was speaking to a group about that. You had mentioned like, stop using words like let's be risk takers and scary. And we're like, that's a smart idea. That's intelligent. Like that's the right thing to do. That's strategically sound. Like it's such a great thing of like, we often use the wrong things and don't have as much empathy. We both have talked about empathy in the past. So, but the one thing I will say, and where people maybe chase titles too much, is I think I'm known for the work, not the titles, and that was part of, starting over at CPB was, as a copywriter was, you started to collect the work and make the work as a writer, then as an ACD, then as a CD, then as a, CCO. And that's always been the thing. And that's always going to be your calling card. I don't think everybody remembers what title Jason Bagley had. They just remember the work.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
One cares about your title. Nobody cares. They care about if you continue to be involved in good work and make good work happen.
Yeah.
You're 100% right.
And do you provide the attitude, the philosophy and the drive and all those things? But it's a difficult job. And it's not for everybody, because you really, the speed is probably the thing that most people don't prepare you for. And you got to be able to jump into a meeting that you might not know everything about and sound like you do and really take it in quickly. And that requires, a hell of a lot of skill.
It's a high pressure job. If you don't enjoy being under a lot of pressure all the time, you're not going to like that. And also the things that you have to care about and be involved in expand exponentially. And it's no longer a job of where you're spending the majority of your time on creativity and talking about creative ideas and talking with teams about their ideas and helping their ideas and being involved in, like, as a CD, you can be very,
as an ECD.
Yeah. I mean, depending on what agency.
Yeah. Big size. Yeah.
But you can be very much in the work. And if that's what you love, and if that's what you're really good at, and that's where your passion is, and if you find yourself kind of like you can't hold your attention for things like budgeting and client management and HR issues, really difficult, and if you don't like the idea of having to fire people sometimes, you're probably not going to enjoy the CCO job. But if you're if you're a problem eater and you can be as interested in client problems and relationship with clients and working with clients and having to look at agency structure, like reorganizing an agency, if you like those type of things, then you may enjoy being a CCO. If you like just like, all right, I love just big, giant problems and different problems every day, and most of them not being directly related to creativity, then maybe you want to give the CCO job a try. But if you don't have much of an attention span for anything other than creativity and creative work, you're probably going to hate the job, wouldn't you say?
Well, the thing about being a CCO, and I've been approached for different kinds of jobs, you know, and people have talked to me about being a CEO, and my friend Mark Daly, you know, when I was asking him about some of the stuff, you know, a few years ago, he was like, why would you ever want to be a CEO? You're the product guy. Like, don't you want to be Johnny Ives versus Tim Cook? Like, you're the product guy. You spend your entire day thinking about the product. Now, that doesn't mean I'm working on the product, but I'm only thinking about how to make the work better. Now, that might be to win business. That might be to save business. It might be about talent and people, but like, I see the CEOs and what Mark Reed has to do and some of the other CEOs, like, man, it's a really hard job. So even though the CCO is a lot of that and understanding money and understanding budgets and understanding structures, these things, but like, it's all in service of the product. So I think that's there's a positive side to that too. And the best CCOs also, I think in the future, and this is probably the number one thing the CCO is going to be looked at for, is taste. And we're in a world of AI. AI is going to provide so many options and so many solutions, but someone has to be the tastemaker. And I think that's the CCO. And I know it's the CCO. It is now, but it's going to be even more, because you're going to have a plethora of ideas from all different times of your life. Someone has to be, that's the one. That's it. That's going to hit, you know? And it's the reason why Pharrell, you know, has been chosen by LV to be the head of the creative director of menswear. He's never cut a pattern. He understands fashion. He understands taste. And he is looked upon as someone who knows that is going to be the thing that is right. And it's same with Rick Rubin. I've talked about this, but Rick Rubin, he doesn't play an instrument really. He doesn't read music really, but he knows what is going to pop. And I think that's going to be the number one job of the CCO.
Yeah.
Beyond all the other things you have to do. And I feel like I have pretty good taste. And again, AI is not going to be able to be the final tastemaker. I think it's where agencies, the really good agencies, are going to be valued. So the agencies that are betting on creativity, like WPP and the holding company that better on creativity, I think long-term are going to be the ones that clients are going to go to, because everything else is going to be able to be figured out and maybe systemized in AI. And it's like, well, who's going to make that idea or bring me the ideas and have a way to bring it to the world? That's why the combining of media and creativity and technology is so important, and why we bet so much on that. They're going to be the ones that the clients go to and say, those people understand how to make my brand stand out and flourish in a world where it would be easy to, because AI is going to, you know, listen, data and AI, that's, of course you can make something, but like, can you make it great? And that's,
it's still going to come down to, somebody's going to have to make the decision.
Yeah.
Of, and clients are going to need someone to help them make that decision that has phenomenal taste. Are you in any way involved, and it's okay if the answer is no on this, with the challenge of figuring out work from home versus in the office?
Yes. I mean, I think everybody's challenged. Anybody's in management is challenged in that way, because, I mean, listen, everybody can have their own opinion. I definitely have an opinion of, I know that when we're together collaborating on creative work, whether you're looking at editing a film, I mean, you can edit a film online together, right? But when you're sitting in that room and I'm going up to the editor on his shoulder and say, just take that, the guy, that's the one I want. Like, that is the level of detail and craft that, like, you just don't get online. And I think the same is true for coming up with ideas and solving problems. And it's just, it's better when we're together. Like, I think that, I don't know if you can say it's been proven there, but like, we know the bigger part of the thing is, like, I think we've sort of lost Monday and Friday. and part of that is, like, you know, whether you're in the office or not, I think we've lost Monday and Friday as really being productive days, you know, especially Friday a bit, you know. And so I'm less about, like, in the office, not in the office. I'm more about, like, how do we get back to 5 days of productivity? And trust me, if we can get it all done in 4 days and it'd be great in 4 days, like, I'd be happy to do it 4 days, 5 days, one day. But, like, I know the reality is that even myself, it feels like we're in a 4 day work week. And we're not, and we might have 7 days worth of work, you know, like, and something has to suffer. What suffers is probably quality a bit, you know? So I don't care if we work from home from Friday. I just want us to work and be excited to work and to make that fun. So either make working from home more fun, more productive, and more interesting and exciting, and the work be better, or figure out how to make, you know, being back in the office were fun and exciting, the same thing.
I like that. What would you say has been, if whatever you're comfortable sharing, hopefully something very provocative, what's one of the biggest mistakes that you've made as a CCO that you would kind of, a cautionary tale for other CCOs? Maybe when you were a CCO.
I think one of the mistakes I've made, sometimes not be clear with what my expectations are, not necessarily from other CCOs who maybe, you know, on some chart report into me, more about, like, maybe I wasn't clear about where I wanted to be brought in on the process. You know what I mean? It's like, well, I can't help you now because it's the day before the meeting.
Yeah.
You know, and that's some of the mistakes is not about creating more barriers and layers, because I don't think that's helpful. Certainly my job is more influence, hopefully inspiration and visible leadership. But I don't think I've done a very good job sometimes, or one of the mistakes I've made is, like, I haven't been clear of, like, oh, in this pitch, I think I should be brought in here, 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 if you want to use me and I'm going to be valuable. That's probably the biggest mistake I've made, and not being crystal clear with the expectations, not of the expectations. It's got to be great. Of course, we know the work has to be great. That's table stakes. So I think I've and then been sort of annoyed that, you know, the process wasn't, you know, like, well, well, how can I help? Well, maybe I wasn't clear. So that's probably a big mistake that CCOs make. You think people, because people are going to try to solve it themselves and not try to bother you and then like try to just like bring you the final package. So that's probably been my biggest mistake, is I haven't been crystal clear with where I need to be brought in on the process, or said, hey, I don't need to be brought in. I trust you guys, just do it all.
You're listening to an extremely abridged version of this interview. To listen to the full uncut episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person, many of which are 2 to 3 hours long, go to schoolofastonishingpursuits.com and check out the ASAP coaching and mentorship programs, including programs for creatives and CDs taught by yours truly, a program for account directors with the best account director I've ever worked with, former managing director of Wieden & Kennedy Portland, Jess Monzi. ASAP has programs on how to be a legendary ECD or CCO, how to sell award-winning work to clients, social strategy, and if you're an art director, you'll want to check out Art Director Mega Machine with legendary art director and 2023's most awarded creative in the world, Danilo Bohr. If accepted, you'll learn directly from some of the most accomplished advertising legends in the industry how to start doing the best work of your life. Through on-demand lessons and live Q&As with your coach, you'll learn exactly how they created famous campaigns for brands like Old Spice, Nike, KFC, Xbox, and more. Class sizes are extremely limited and do sell out, so get your application in ASAP. See what I did there? And as a bonus, you'll get access to the complete library of uncut episodes of Bagley Talks to an Important Person.
So let's say they say, look, everyone in the room agrees this client is just really tough. They do not seem to want, like, we bring them good work. We can show you decks of great work that we brought to them. They won't buy it. What do you do as a CCO?
Well, that's a CEO's decision. You know, because if we want to continue to have this account for whatever reason, you know, then our jobs are to keep fighting the fight. My job is to keep trying to sell with maybe new teams or new approach, or really sit down with the client and say, hey, what do we want out of this? What do we want to collectively get together? Like, what is the issue? Because I promise you, the reason you get fired is because of the work in the end, right? That's how if things go into bits, work's not as good. So remove that from the obstacle. Have that hard conversation with clients, or not so hard. Like, hey, the business is doing well. Like, we're being paid well. The relationship is good, but like, we haven't really made the kind of work that this brand has the potential. Your brand has that potential to make, and it should have that place in the world. Like, what is it? What's your ambition? How can we help? Have those conversations. When all of that's exhausted, which it usually isn't,
right?
Then it's really up to the people who run the company to decide, is this the kind of work? Now, they might just be then maybe there's other things that they're going to be provocative in. Maybe the products, we can get involved in making the products more provocative or whatever it might be. There's got to be creativity to be applied somewhere. But that's a big person decision. You know, that's a big adult decision of what we want to do if we stand for creativity. But I think there's lots of types of creativity that, you know, there's so many different places to apply it.
Yeah.
Commerce. And we really expanded what we mean, but I don't know. I don't think we talk enough about it as agencies, the leadership with the teams, and then have that conversation with clients. Say, okay, well, we went into this wanting better work and great work, but we probably haven't made it. You know, what could we do to get to where you want?
Yeah.
And if the client's like, okay, here's what we do, or like, I'm happy with where we're at, then it's just a decision because.
Yeah. But often I find that when you do have that conversation and I think people need to be given permission to have that conversation, because sometimes they feel like, well, we can't go admit to them that the work we've been doing for the past 2 years is not that great. And I would say, yes, you can. you must. Like, you have to go in and say, look. And again, it's not about putting all the blame on them. That's not gonna go very well. But just saying, hey, we have incredible ambitions for your brand. We think the potential is like amazing to make this brand more iconic and to drive your business more and to do the type of creative work that's gonna do that. And it's just not happening right now. And we need to know, are, what can we do better? And we can talk about like some of the things that we could use your help on, but how do we fix this? And I think I agree with you. I think those conversations just need to happen more often, because I've had those conversations with clients and seen the work get better very quickly afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen? Like, you just never get fired for showing too many good ideas.
I mean, the worst that could happen is it could result in the agency having to make the decision that, hey, this client is not interested. They are super happy with the very mediocre work that we've been doing. The team is miserable working on it because they want to make great work. I think we're going to have to resign this account. And by resigning a large account, you might have to do some layoffs. That's the worst that could happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there's worse things maybe that can happen. But again, that's a decision people have to make. But I don't know. I think a lot of it is like we're just afraid to ask questions. We're afraid to be honest. And it's all on how you do it. It's all on the style. You know, it's like if you have the trust between, you know, the relationship could be good. It's just like, hey, we haven't got to the thing.
Yeah.
Clients can only buy work that you present to them, by the way.
Can I redact my former statement?
Yes, redact.
All right.
You can edit it.
We're going to redact this from the record. It is not the worst thing that could happen that you lose the account and have to do layoffs. The worst thing that could happen is that you retain a very bad account that is making everyone miserable, and that toxicity begins to corrode other parts of the agency and just affect everyone's morale and the creative reputation. That's actually the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, and listen, I've been part of it, you know, and I've watched it happen, you know, and I think I want to remove the phrase, well, I think, out of the vernacular. Well, I think the client wants this. I think, like, why aren't we just asking? why aren't we together setting the ambitions or saying, hey, here's what I expect, here's what I want. Like, and when you get these clients, John Halverson from Mondelez, like this guy, like, man, like an amazing, honest, ambitious, but like you can just have a normal conversation with them about creativity or what's expected, where we're not doing well, where can we do better? Like, there are more of those kinds of clients than you think. And the, you know, clients, someone said, like, clients get the agency they deserve, you know? And I do think that's true. I think there's better clients, and I think there are so many great agencies, and they just got to find themselves, you know, and maybe there are some of those accounts that out there just are traditionally haven't made great work, but maybe the expectations just haven't been clearly defined. And maybe it's like, maybe we're not the agency for you. And that takes confidence. That takes money in the bank. That takes all the things. It's easy for Whiting and Kenny, but when you're an independent agency, like they're easier, you know. But again, I don't think there's enough honesty and transparency about the quality of work and what one might see as good and one might see as bad, because, you know, somebody's making it, right? Yeah. And someone's green lighting it and everybody's feeling good about it. And we're all, you know, taking sometimes the fees to get it done. But I don't know. I think it gets over-dramatized a bit. And I think it's unfair. I think there are so many great clients doing so many great things, and we don't talk enough about that. And we always focus on like the clients who are not doing it. But I would say 90% of the clients out there either want it, and sometimes it doesn't just happen, or it doesn't happen enough, or the situation isn't right. But like in the end, we need to have more empathy of how hard our clients' jobs are sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, too. Like, and you and I have talked about empathy in the past. Like, that is something that, you know, so many decisions and so many, you know, ramifications are in the decisions that we think are easy. They're not.
Yeah.
How do we provide, you know, remove the barriers of fear for them so then they can make these decisions without thinking like we've risked the entire, you know, pot of money. We bet it all on this. You know, stop saying that. have empathy that the, you know, they want, everybody wants to be trailblazers and do great things. Sometimes it's just not as clear, and we haven't provided the cover for them to make some of those decisions.
What are some of the ways that you've, because we talked about the first step to selling great work is empathy with the client.
Yeah.
That you have to become, you have to put in the work and the curiosity to get to know them, to get to know their goals, to get to know all the issues they're facing, which means you got to have conversations. You got to actually ask them a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And develop empathy for, like, they're dealing with a more complicated world than you are. You're just taking a brief, coming up with great work, thinking, hey, why don't they buy this great work? They have a lot of things that they're considering and a lot of different challenges and politics and all these things. So you got to start by learning that and empathizing with that and understanding their problems. What are the, do you have any specific ways that you have developed, at, like, let's say at the beginning of a relationship with a client, a new piece of business, as a creative leader, how do you start to build that relationship? Like, what types of practices or conversations do you have?
Well, you know, I call it, you know, being, you know, you can't be provocative if you're having charmed people into trusting you, you know, and I don't mean that in a, you know, a sneaky way. I mean it, the charm by, like, you've put the work in. You've put the work in as a relationship builder. You've had the conversations, you make the phone calls, you meet, you go out to dinner to not have three bottles of wine. You go out to dinner to hear about the business and what they've learned and how they, how you can be taught by them their business. Then you do your own homework on it. I think then you start to develop that trust. And trust is the number one thing to try to get a client to maybe buy the work you want them to buy, you know, or you collectively agree that it's the right work. If you don't have it, there's just, you're not going to get it done. And that requires putting in the work. Like, you got to understand, like, I mean, how many times have you been in that meeting? Like, and they're like, well, did you guys know that? Oh, I didn't know that. Well, you know, well, that's one, you're already got one strike against you.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know this part that to the client seemed obvious that you would know. You've already started on the back foot.
Yeah.
Because how do I trust you if you aren't learning about my business? So I don't think we put enough time in for creative people, especially to really, I mean, you look at the old Mad Men and, like, and the way it was back in the 70s, like, you started working on Pan Am, you'd go fly around, you'd go then, you'd spend a month inside the hangars and learning the business. And we don't have enough time for our people to get really immersed in the brands.
Yeah.
So, and that's the places you learn the trust. You spend the time with your brand partners, like, bonding over the love of this brand.
Yeah. And I think the problem is you're creatives.
Yeah, it's time.
They, you have to realize that for many clients, I would say maybe even most clients, the default position, the starting position of the relationship is, I don't totally trust these creatives because I assume they don't really care or understand my bit. Like, maybe the account people do, but these creatives don't really understand. They don't really care that much. They mostly just want to get their crazy, fun, provocative art pieces made with my money.
Yep.
That's your starting position. So it's all the things you just talked about that are going to overcome. It's going to be like, wait a minute, this is not what I thought. They actually, wow, they seem like they're really curious. They really care about not only my brand, but me and my success as a client. And then you overcome that through, you know, going in to have in-person meetings, going and learning, going touring the factory, learning everything you can, asking them a lot of questions. Very rapidly, they're like, this is not what I assumed. Actually, this creative leader does care about my business. They have my best interest at heart. Okay.
Yeah.
I can start 100%. To trust this person.
Well, then you see it on the other side of it too. It's like when you see those, look at these accounts, like, oh, they usually have creative leaders that have been on it a long time that have the trust of the clients. It's like, so it takes time to earn it a bit. And that's why I think some of these, whether it's an account like Dove that Daniel Fisher has been, you know, leading for a long time, it's like the clients trust, you know, Daniel, you know, so much with not just coming up with great ideas, but like caring and understanding the nuances of the brand.
Yeah.
And not putting the brand at risk. And they're making some of the most provocative most provocative work out there. So it doesn't mean trust doesn't mean the work's going to end up being bland. Trust is the reason the work is not going to
be bland. Opposite. So people, I get this question all the time, like, how did you sell all that crazy Old Spice work? And the short answer, there's a lot of techniques and a lot of things we did, but the short answer is the client knew that we cared about that brand probably more than them. We cared about Old Spice more than they cared about Old Spice, and they knew that. And with that comes a tremendous amount of respect, because they knew we were never going to do anything that we thought would harm that brand. And in fact, we were going to do everything to help that brand. And that just, that goes a long way to selling
that was,
stuff.
That was it. So it's a new bit of skill for creative people to have to be this good at forging relationships, you know? And I think that's, you know, a modern creative leader and a modern creative person, like, it is forging great relationships with really smart brand partners. And you're as much a relationship person as the account person might be and the strategy person might be. So it's not always the easiest thing to do, you know, because, you know, creative people aren't always as natural at doing stuff like that.
It's a skill.
But if you want to be a CCO, if you want to be ECD, you want to be CDs, like, that is something that is required. You know, you have to have those interpersonal skills that prove to clients that you have put the work in to understand the brand and then tell the stories of the brand in such authentic ways that it resonates with consumers.
We're taking a commercial break here in the Bagley Talks to an Important Person podcast to ask Rob Reilly, do you have a hard out in 8 minutes?
I do. I have a hard out in 7 or 8 minutes.
Okay. So what should we get to for?
You have a rapid fire? Is there a rapid fire question? I mean, my podcast has a rapid fire.
We're going to have to make it rapid fire. What, when you have been working on something with a team, let's say it's a new business pitch that it was like a 4-month pitch, and everybody has just worked their butt off. You put what you think is a great, you know, pitch together and super high hopes. Maybe it was even a great client everyone was excited about working on, and you lose the pitch.
Yeah.
Or insert scenario, like the best campaign that this team has ever come up with, and the client, you can't sell it to the client. As a creative leader, what do you do after that to help out your team and to like kind of boost morale and all that stuff?
You tell your own stories. I think that's, anytime I have a hard conversation or have to deliver hard news, I always try to put it in the context of like, I've been through this, whether it's been, not getting the job I wanted to get, or it's being told, you know, you're going to have to leave the company if you don't fix your attitude, and having to go to coaching. When I have to have a hard conversation with someone about like, listen, your attitude is great, but like, listen, I went through it. You know, I'm a recovering asshole. You know, like I went through that. And so I try to put myself and say, I've been through these things and I worked on this and it happens, but like, this is the business we've chosen. And that's why I think we always have to have a lot of irons in the fire. You know, you've got to have many things going, because you never know when something you've worked so hard on has failed, you know. But, you know, something like Mini Counterfeit that I worked on years ago at Crispin, you know, with great partners and Franklin and Paul Stechschulte and Tiffany Rolfe. And like, that took 2 years to get sold. You know, it was dead 10 times, but you know, Andrew and my wife, Laura Bowles, kept bringing it back, and it finally got sold. We'd had to keep changing it and keep changing it and keep bringing it back and re presenting it. No, it's not bad. It's a different idea now. Well, it's the same thing. So I think it's just, it's the business, and you've got to be prepared. You have to have thick skin. And even though you've poured your heart and soul into it, like, you've got to be able to be a fountain of ideas. You have to be, to get back up, you know, what do they say, you know, get back up on the horse and ride again. You know, it will happen. And the best ideas, the riskiest ideas, even though we don't like to use that word, always have a chance of dying. And I'd rather something die that had a chance to be incredible than spend 6 months on something and it ends up being super average.
Yeah.
I'd rather have something die. No, I don't, and hopefully I don't have to make that choice, right? Because, man, when you do one of those ideas that the world falls in love with, that people love, share, and spread, and the press writes about, and it's killing, and it's driving business, like, there is no other feeling. So I'd rather keep shooting for that stars. So remind them that that idea would have been one of those ideas. So the good news is, you know how to make them. Make them, make more of them.
Yeah.
And because you need to, the new ratio, it's almost 100 great ideas to sell one. You have to have 100 great ideas. That's all that. And we have to be okay with that ratio. And even ideas that you've spent 4 months on that end up dying might be better than the idea that you work 4 months on that you've produced that ends up being super lame.
Yeah.
Or average.
I think,
so, I don't know. It's, I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I think it's like anything. We are a business of highs and lows. And how do you not get so high and not get so low? That's me. I stay in the middle. I never get so excited and never get so down, because I know we're good enough to have more ideas.
What I like about what you just, a nugget of what you just said is, what I heard is, don't forget to focus on what was accomplished. And if your team has put together an amazing body of work, then make sure they know that, and that in your eyes, they have succeeded. And I tell this to creative directors. Your creatives need to know that if they have brought you great concepts, they have fully succeeded.
Yeah.
It's your job as the CD and as the account team and as a strategist to go sell it and make it happen.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't happen, make sure your creatives know, hey guys, we failed to sell that, but you fully did your job, and you're going to be raised
in
bonus.
It's a great lesson and great point.
And they should be bonused and given raises based on the quality of the ideas they're presenting, not necessarily what gets produced.
Yeah. But your CDs, you know, and your client should be judged on, can they sell that work?
Exactly.
You know, that's a great distinction we don't do enough of. You know, we don't say enough thank yous. We don't do enough good jobs. All that is free. I try to do as much as possible, send to account people, like, great job, heard you're awesome, thank you, all of it. It's free. And we just don't do enough. We don't say it enough to our coworkers or like our colleagues that sometimes are our competitors and team. Like, if you see something great, like, send somebody. Like, nothing feels better than someone saying, hey, I saw that, it was amazing. You know, like, great job. Like, awesome, dude. Like, I don't need to hear it. You know, I don't like praise. I don't like anybody making a nice toast about me. But like, when someone says sends a nice, hey, I heard you were awesome yesterday in the health summit. Makes you feel good.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know you've put so much work into that presentation or that talk that it was recognized.
That can power somebody for a month.
That's another thing of like the power of positivity and just gratitude in a business that is hard, is tough, you know. So I think that's a good, and it should be cross departments. Like, you're a CCO, send it to account people.
Yeah.
Send it to strategy, send it to production, send it to freaking CFOs. Hey, I heard you figured out how to get a way for us to pay for that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
When was the last time somebody sent a CFO a thank you? I do.
In the early 1980s, that's when it happened.
Yeah, we had to approve the drugs, you know.
Hey, Rob, I know you got to go. Yeah. You are a dear friend.
Well, listen,
you're a treasure.
Jason, I want to I want to say, if you need a part two, we can set up, you know, if we need to do a part two, if you need to edit, because I'm sure you, when you look at this stuff, you're like, I think we got about eight usable minutes.
Untrue.
I will do more time.
I think we got great stuff, but I will absolutely take you up on a part two. Cause I can never get enough. You're an asset to our industry. Thanks for everything you do. And you dress great. Your head looks great. You got a nice tight shave. I
shave for you, man. I shave for you. If I could just work on the eyebrows, I gotta.
This is something you don't know. I aspire to dressing like Rob Riley. Like, you got the sparkly Supreme going on.
Yeah, this is a special one. I've got a great friend, Brett Baker, who is head of production Supreme. So we're great friends, and she gets me some Supreme stuff. You know, we exchange some furniture once in a while. You know, it's a great relationship. But yeah, listen, I think you. Creative people, like, you're you know, look cool, dress cool, like, you know, express yourselves. Like, that's I know I made fun of with my hats and with my stuff I wear, but like, it makes me feel like, you know, I am pushing myself a bit. You know, sometimes I'll wear something like, what, why did I put that on? But then I'm walking on the street and someone says, hey man, I like your hat, or I love your shoes. Like, this is part of our industry. We are creative people. It doesn't mean you have to dress cool to make great work. But I do think, like, clients are coming to the agency to see not themselves in the mirror all the time.
All right, everybody. And we're going to put links to all of Rob's favorite shopping places in the description.
I'm happy to provide that.
And then I'll know where to buy all my clothes.
Listen, man, I'll do anything for you. You've made some of the greatest work, and you're an amazing leader. And I think providing, like, so much for people right now who need it. So happy to help. See you soon, man.
Thank you.
Go Rangers, and go. Who else is playing tonight for you? Like, football. Go Texas. Go Wildcats. I don't even know what team you're in. Sun Devils?
What is wrong with my brain now that you asked me?
It's Rangers versus the Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks, yeah.
And then your college thing is what?
The Cougars versus the Longhorns.
All right, well.
Craig and I have got a double battle going on.
Well, it sounds like a great weekend of sports. I would wish I was invited to that. My wife would hate that, but... it's a great time for sports right now. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast.
Hey, we have one extra ticket for the World Series game Friday night if you can fly down. All right.
I love my wife. I love my wife too much.
I know you do. All right. Thanks, Rob. We'll talk soon.
Peace, man. Cheers.